Well, good morning. Any slip and sliding on the way? A little bit, yeah. That the snow, the fluffy stuff when it gets packed, it gets really slippery. Well, great to have you here. Hey, before we get started today, I want to say thanks to all of those who helped us switch over here for Christmas. You know, imagine if you had 300 people coming over to your house for Christmas, but you had to do it in and out of a suitcase. And that's the challenge that they faced, you know, with a portable church. And I think they do a great job. So thanks to Mike and Beth and Brenda and, let's see, Brittany, Krista, all those who are involved with this. Thank you so much for doing that. And then thanks to God for taking care of the outside. This to me looks Christmassy. It looks Christmassy. Well, Christmas is a season that I absolutely love. I'm a huge Christmas fan. But it's also a season that tends to get a little busier and a little more stressful sometimes than others. And I think this series is going to come at a good time. Along those lines, how many of you, this is a church, we're gathering together, so you can be honest here among us. How many of you, with a show of hands, would say that your lives most weeks are pretty busy? How many would say that? All right, I'll keep your hands up. How many of you would say this time of the year, it gets busier? All right, you can put your hands down. I got another question for you, a little confessional here. It's Communion Sunday, right? So it's all good. All right, so next question. How many of you would like to be saving a little more money? How many of you, just in general, would like to be saving a little more money? All right, hands up. How many of you tend to spend a little extra money this time of year? Push them a little higher. Okay. One more question, and we're done with this foolishness, but it ties in. All right. How many of you would say, you're honest enough to say, I've got a lot of stuff. In our house, our apartment, your room, you got a lot of stuff. Okay, leave the hands up. How many of you tend to bring out a little more stuff this time of the year, displaying it? Okay. Thank you for doing that. That's the end of the confessional until we get closer to communion. The point I'm trying to make by doing that is to point out that without Christmas, without this season, most of us tend to live pretty busy lives. Most of us are pretty financially stretched most of the time. And a lot of us live pretty materially augmented lives. How is that for a nice way to say it, huh? Materially augmented. I work hard on that. All right, so now that's true. And then what happens, those things are all true, but then what happens, the holidays come, and we tend to get not just busy, but busier. We tend to not just be financially stretched, but financially strained. And then when it comes to our houses, which generally have a lot of stuff in them, we find a way to put more on display. Here's a statement that I'd just like you to take a look at this point. This is a statement that I think is true for most people living in this area, and that is that holiday traditions can make this season that we're in right now extra full. You know, most of us, again, we're full on a lot of areas of life, but then this season comes and things get extra full. And a lot of reasons that it become extra full is because of our traditions. And for the record, I'm a big fan of traditions. Big fan, at least good traditions. Good traditions are a good thing. One of the things that Laura and I did when we got married is, as we were coming together as a couple, we sat down and we said, what are some traditions that we want our family to have? What are some traditions? And we have more traditions around Christmas than any other season. And I believe traditions can be a good thing. Traditions can connect you to your roots. Traditions can unify you as a family. Traditions can provide a sense of home, a sense of identity. Traditions can provide stability in this world that is constantly changing. Having some traditions can provide some stability. And traditions can keep you tethered to a common story. So there's a lot of good things surrounding traditions. And I would add to that that God-honoring, Christ-centered traditions, they are the best of all. Those are the best traditions of all. Now, in your bulletins, there's a blue note page. If you haven't already, please take that out. And don't write what's on the screen right now. Don't write that. Don't write holiday traditions can make this season extra full. Because that's the default. That will just happen. You don't need to write that one down. Here's what I'd encourage you to write down instead. Just change two of the words. And please write down Christmas traditions can make this season extra meaningful. There are all kinds of traditions that people celebrate this time of the year, but instead of necessarily making this season richer and more meaningful, sometimes it can just wear you out and stretch you thin. And one of the things that we're trying to do as a church family is we're trying to every year observe what's called the season of Advent. For us, when it comes to Christmas as a church, it's not just a pleasant interruption. We're not just doing series, topic. Oh, it's Christmas. What are we going to talk about? Historically, with a number of different church traditions, they have this season called Advent. And instead of it being something that's a stressful season at the end of the year, it's how you start. Advent is actually the start of the church calendar, the Christian calendar. So think about that. What if instead of the holidays being this stressful time at the end of our year and we start our year just all stressed out, what if we started our year every year with Advent, where we're reassessing why we're doing what we're doing? We prepare our hearts and our homes for a fresh start, and we get started like that. We get started. I believe that this is why traditions can, the God-honoring, Christ-centered traditions can be such a good thing, because rather than making your life more stressful, they can help you determine, hey, this is a priority. And they actually can simplify your life. And instead of being more exhausted, stretched more thin, having good God-honoring traditions, they can actually help you pull back. And when you have a million things to choose from, they can help you say, here are the ones. When all else goes, if everything else falls, this is what we're going to keep. So that's what we want to press into. And we do that every year in different ways. This year, the way I'd like to press into it is to look specifically at some of our traditions, and even more specifically, some of our symbols and some of our songs. Because I believe if we press into those, it can really help make this season richer and more meaningful. So let's jump right in. If you have a Bible, let's open up to Joshua chapter 4, and we're going to look at verses 1 through 7. As we're turning there, if you don't have a Bible at home, we'd love to give you an early Christmas gift, absolutely free. There's a stack of Bibles on the welcome table. Please take one home with you today if you don't have a Bible at home. All right, this, what we're looking at right here, this predates by hundreds of years the birth of Christ into our world, but I believe it has something to say here to what we're going to be looking at in this series. Joshua chapter 4, start with verse 1. When all the nation had finished passing over the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, take 12 men from the people, from each tribe a man, and commanded them, saying, take 12 stones from here out of the midst of the Jordan, and from the very place where the priest's feet stood firmly, and bring them over with you, and lay them down in the place where you lodge tonight. Then Joshua called the 12 men from the people of Israel, whom he had appointed, a man from each tribe. And Joshua said to them, pass on before the ark of the Lord your God in the midst of the Jordan, and take up each of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of tribes of the people of Israel, that this may be a sign among you. And when your children ask in time to come, what do these stones mean? Then tell them. The waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord when it passed over the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever. The passage, again, isn't speaking directly to the birth of Christ, but what you see in this passage is you have God asking them to commemorate something that God did. And he's pretty specific in here, too. There's a specific material, it's stones, there's a specific number, it's 12. There's all these specific things that God says to do to commemorate this. And if we had more time, it'd be fun to dig into this passage and look at all the context around it. Because what God is having them commemorate is, I fulfilled a promise here. Hundreds of years prior to this historical event, God had made this promise that he was going to create a nation out of one man and his wife. He had given that promise. And he promised him, you're going to have a land. And here we're seeing the fulfillment of this and other promises in this event. And so there was this great promise. God is asking them to commemorate the fulfillment of this promise. And not just to commemorate it then, but then also to say, let's do something here in such a way that people are going to ask questions, and when they ask questions, tell them this. Tell them this. So you see a little bit of a connection there with Christmas? Okay, let's look at one more of these examples, and then we're really going to get more specific here when it comes to Christmas. This is from Exodus. This is from the book of Exodus. This actually comes before, and it actually speaks a little bit to this promise that comes later. This is Exodus chapter 12, verses 24 through 27. Exodus chapter 12, verses 24 through 27. It says this, you shall observe this rite as a statute for you and your sons forever. They're talking about a rite called Pentecost, which, so much richness there. So you're to observe this rite as a statute for you and your sons forever. And when you come to the land that the Lord will give you, which we just read about, will give you as he has promised, you shall keep this service. And when the children say to you, what do you mean by this service? You shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, for he passed over the houses of the people of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians, but spared our houses. And the people bowed their heads and they worshiped. All right, once again, here's another example. You've got this example of there's this promise of God. The promise is coming to pass. He gives the people a very specific rite in this case that they're to celebrate a very specific way. And as they celebrate this and people start asking questions, he says, when they ask, tell them this. Well, now, what I want to be careful is not misapplying this to Christmas. I think there's some general similarities here. Technology. Jesus didn't have to deal with this stuff, you know. Maybe there's a reason he chose not to, right, in the fullness of time. There's another sermon topic. All right. What are you talking about? Oh, yeah, Christmas. I think these passages we just looked at do a good job of kind of setting up this series, because we do see that God at times will have us commemorate things. There's value in commemorating things, and there's value in commemorating things in such a way that people ask you, what are you doing? And you have a response that brings glory to God, especially fulfilling those promises. But what I want to do before we go any further is to give two very key distinctions when it comes to Christmas that differentiate it from what we just read. One of the distinctions is this, that God is not a fan of tradition for tradition's sake. He's not a fan of tradition for tradition's sake. In fact, one of the things I did a couple years ago is I did a word study, and I looked up every time the word tradition showed up, at least in the English, you know. Every time the English word tradition shows up in the Bible, how does the Bible speak of it? And you should try that sometime. It very, very rarely speaks of it in a positive way. Almost every time the word tradition is used, God is giving some sort of reprimand. He's saying, hey, you have lost the meaning. You're celebrating this thing, but it's not what you really should be celebrating. Or it's, you're following these traditions, you don't even know why. They're these traditions of people. I never gave you this. And so when traditions distract us from what we should really be focused on, when traditions become detached from their meaning, when traditions are just become not meaningful but meaningless, then there's no value in them. So I want to make that point really clear. The Bible does not teach just tradition for tradition's sake. And a lot of times churches fall into problems because they make something sacred that's not sacred. It's just the way you've done it, which may or may not be a good way. All right, so there's one distinction, that the Bible doesn't promote tradition for tradition's sake. Here's a second distinction, and it follows from that. The second distinction is this. Unlike the Passover, unlike those 12 stones, you can go to the Bible and you won't find a prescribed way to celebrate Christmas. The Bible actually has very little to say about the actual birth. Only two books of our Bible, Matthew and Luke, really speak to the birth the way we do this time of the year. So if you're thinking about Christmas and you're like, oh, I want to celebrate Christmas the Christian way, the Bible doesn't really spell that out. The Bible doesn't have it. So I want you to hear this very clearly. Over the next 3 weeks, as we talk about richness of the symbols and the songs, this isn't us saying, here's the ECC dress code for your church. That's not what we're going to do. Next week, as we press into the songs, we're not going to tell you, here is the approved ECC godly Christmas playlist. Because that's not prescribed. And for some of you, if you, as you seek God on this, if you say, you know what, for us, we're going to have this time of the year, for me, for my family, this time of the year is going to be a holiday celebration. It's going to be a time where we really focus on each other, we focus on family, we focus on, you know, warm fuzzies and all that. Okay. The Bible doesn't forbid that. The Bible doesn't prescribe that you must celebrate Christmas a certain way. But the reason we're taking this time is because for a couple reasons. One is because I think a lot of people call something Christmas that's not Christmas. So don't call it Christmas. And secondly, I want to challenge us to press into some of these things that people have adopted over time, because some of them are really good. And some of them, if you think about the richness, it could make this season more meaningful, more profound, and it could really actually help us prepare for a fresh advent of Christ among us. So that's the direction we're gonna press into. And to do so, we're gonna have to ask some hard questions, including this one. There's a place to write this question down. Here's a question I'd like you to consider. Because today, we're going to focus specifically Christmas decorations. So here's the question to consider. Do you put up holiday decorations, or do you commemorate Christmas? Those aren't the same things, are they? Not necessarily. They could be, but not necessarily. Are you putting up holiday decorations, or are you intentionally commemorating Christmas? And again, we're going to talk about some specific symbols. I got a couple here in this box. I'm not telling you decorate with these things. I'm not telling you to decorate at all. We clear on that? But here is some meaning that has been ascribed to some of these symbols that I think could be very, very helpful. Now, even before I open up this bin, you know, one of the ways that I think a lot of us could do a better job of commemorating Christmas versus just dressing up for the holidays is by cutting the number of things we put out by half. I'm not a interior design guy, so I'm way out of my element here. But I've seen some people at work in that area, and I noticed that what some of them do really well is instead of just having lots of stuff, the really good ones will feature things. When they're trying to create like a room or something like that or some kind of atmosphere, instead of just having tons of stuff that just kind of is all over, they'll have a couple things that are really featured. And so I want to encourage some of us, you know, we would have a richer, more meaningful Christmas if we just had less. And we had a couple things that we really emphasized rather than doing too much. So at our house, here's a couple of things that we feature. Not that we do it right, but here's a couple things that we do along with some of the meaning that they come from. One of them is lights. How many of you guys, as part of your commemorating Christmas, you pull out some lights? All right. And I won't ask how many of you cuss as you are trying to untangle, because, you know, every once in a while I'm going to have to confess on that one. But lights, let's talk about these a little bit. Lights can be a profound symbol. They can be, if you think about what they are. Here's one example. If you go back in the scriptures, Christmas is really a fulfillment of great promises. The promise primarily of the coming of the Christ. And if you look at the Old Testament and in the New, the imagery of light is ascribed to the Christ. Here's one example from the book of Isaiah. Take a look at this. This is one of the prophecies that many of us will read or hear this time of year. The people living in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of darkness, a light has dawned. This is attributed to the birth of the Christ, Jesus. So the idea of having lights that pierce the darkness, what great symbolism there. In fact, this it's not just an Old Testament thing. We're going to, there's a season called Lent that heads up towards Easter. And one of the things we're going to do is look at the book of John. John is going to be where we're going to spend most of our time heading into Easter this year. John uses a lot of this imagery, this darkness and light. So if you decorate with lights and you stop and you reflect on, look at this. It can be a powerful symbol that God has come to illuminate, to come light the way, to come break into a world filled with darkness. So I think that's a great symbol. All right, here's another one. I couldn't pack our Christmas trees in here, but I got this little wooden Christmas tree. And this is symbolizing more than just a Christmas tree. There are several different plants that people feature this time of year. How many of you, can we go to the next slide? How many of you feature one or more of these plants this time of year? How many of you? All right, let's talk about a couple of these. Let's start with the evergreen, with the evergreen trees. Again, it's so hard to trace the origins of this stuff, but a lot of the legends say that this originated, the idea of bringing a Christmas tree, or I should say just at this point, an evergreen into your house. The origins are in Scandinavia. So how many of you have some Scandinavian blood in you? All right. So your ancestors
I guess some of them did this, where they looked out at their winter. And in Scandinavia, a lot like Minnesota, cold, snowy. Well, imagine living there hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And you don't have electricity this time of year. You don't have a furnace system this time of year. You don't even have anything resembling roads. You don't have cars. You don't have Gore-Tex. You don't have puffy jackets, right? And an Arctic cat is something that will eat your chickens, not something that you can hop on and have fun, okay? So that's old world Scandinavia. And in old world Scandinavia, then, winter became this season of darkness and death. And these Vikings would look out and they would see these trees that could survive winter's harshness. And they thought there must be some magic there. So they'd cut them down and they'd bring some of that magic into their home. And if only our Vikings had done that instead of signing Donovan McNabb, we'd no. Yeah. Gotta throw it in where you can. Okay. So this idea predates Christianity, at least in the region. And what happened then is when Christian missionaries made their way to Scandinavia, they began to look at this and they said, you know what? This is a powerful symbol. And just as Paul was able to at one time say, look, here is a temple to an unknown God, and then he used that as a launching point to talk about his faith, the Christian missionaries were able to look at this tradition that those folks had, and they said, you know, God is like this. Our God is like this. He has the power to overcome darkness and death. And so they adopted that symbol. So could a Christmas tree be a powerful symbol? Absolutely. There's some other plants that people pull out this time of year, and they have similar origins. Holly was, it's hard to know exactly which of these, you know, stories to believe, but some of them trace this back to the Celtic areas, and they said that people would bring holly into their homes for some of the same kind of reasons. Holly could survive the harsh winters. There must be some power here. And then where this really took off was when some of the Roman soldiers had to go to the Celtic regions to serve. They saw that custom being being celebrated, and we brought this custom back, you know, with them. And then some people started making these wreaths, and then some of the Christians in Rome started to say, hey, this is a lot like Christianity. These wreaths with the little red berries and the thorny leaves, this kind of looks like a crown of thorns. And so then they could kind of take over that symbol there. And the idea of a circle with the wreath, that's circles long have represented eternity. So there's some background there, how that could be a powerful symbol. Mistletoe, you go back to Scandinavia again. Some people say that the Scandinavian warriors were so superstitious about this plant that they would actually stop a battle if they saw mistletoe in a tree. And then growing out of its role then of a peacemaker, mistletoe would take on later the role of protector. And so people would take mistletoe, they put it over their door frames, they put it above cribs as a way to try to harness this power. Well, Christians came in and said, you know, this is superstition, but there's a real God who can bring peace, who can bring protection. And then how it says it's a symbol of the resurrection, mistletoe isn't a tree itself. Its life comes forth, I understand, from a tree. And so they said, like in Jesus coming, life coming forth from being nailed to the cross, you know, life can come forth as we die to ourselves and are born again in Christ. So there was some powerful symbolism there, possibly too, besides an excuse to kiss somebody. All right. Poinsettias, that you have to go across the ocean for. Before it was that little story about the cute little girl and Christmas time and all that, the Aztecs believed that this was a powerful symbol. And what they basically believed is when we sacrifice people and their blood goes into the ground, if it was a good sacrifice, it springs forth into these poinsettias. And so there were some Christians who said, you know, this is in the real world. Jesus came to provide a perfect sacrifice for our sins. So, again, I'm not telling you to use these plants. I'm not even telling you. There might be some of you that philosophically say, really? These are the origins? Are you kidding me? And you say, I don't want anything to do with these. You know, I'm not telling you to go one way or the other. All I'm saying is that there could be some very powerful symbolism here. And when people ask, why do you do this? You know, at least if you're sincerely doing it for those reasons, you could say it can represent this. All right, well, let me do one more, and it kind of flows out of this train of thinking. It's the most controversial of our Christmas symbols, anything related to Santa. How many of you guys do something with stockings, hang up stockings? Okay, well, this tradition springs forth or is related to traditions surrounding Santa. And one of the things that I probably comment on this every year because I find it so ironic that there's a lot of Christians who, if you even say the word Santa, they will question your salvation. But what's interesting to note is of the two traditions, traditions around Santa or traditions around Christmas trees, which is more Christian in origin? Santa. Because Santa or Santa myths are derived, if you boil them down, from who? Saint Nicholas. And Saint Nicholas was a guy who was a follower of Jesus Christ, profoundly so, so much that we're still talking about him today. And all of the fact from fiction is very hard to distinguish, but one of the most common legends surrounding him, or fact, we don't know for sure, is that there was this very, very poor family, and he snuck into their house one night, and as they had hung out their stockings over the fireplace to dry, he slipped some say money, some say gifts that really helped out this family. So, potentially, if to you, St. Nick, if Christmas stockings represent generosity, what a great and God-honoring symbol. Or if this is a reminder that when you do gifts, that God gave us the greatest gift of all, that's a powerful symbol. Now, can you take any of these too far? Absolutely. You can take all of them too far. And that's why here are the questions I want us to focus on as we close this part down here. In your notes, I've got five questions. And what I'd like you to do with these questions is actually ask yourself them. And if you live with a roommate, talk this over with your roommate. If you're, you know, a family living together or a family that has some people coming back home for Christmas time, for New Year's, talk about these kind of questions. If you want your season to be richer and more meaningful, ask questions like these. Here's one question you could ask. Is everything in our home Christmas compatible? And you can just drop the "miss" part. Is everything in your home Christ compatible? I had roughed out this message earlier in the week, and then I was working on it again last night. And last night I was really struck with, this could be a great Christmas tradition. What if one of your Christmas family traditions was, we're going to do an inventory this time of the year. As we start a new year, what if we went through our house and we were consciously aware of preparing our house and our homes for a fresh advent of Christ? And what if we went through and said, Jesus is coming, you know, knowing that he already came, but Jesus is coming on the 25th to our house. How's he going to feel about my Harold and Kumar's Christmas box set? You know, how's he going to feel about this? How's he going to feel about that? What if that was part of our Christmas tradition, where we went through and we looked and said, is our house filled with God-honoring things? Or have we allowed over this year some things to come into our homes that really shouldn't be there? They're not really compatible with Christmas. And here's a direction, too, some of us may need to go, and that is, are some of our Christmas decorations not Christmas compatible? You know, I don't know where the line, where you cross the line between this is a good and God-honoring celebration and this is just gluttony. But I sometimes wonder if Jesus was to walk into some of our homes and see all these Christmas decorations and just go, really? You spent that much on that? That's how you're stewarding my money? Okay. You know? And again, the point is not a guilt trip. The point is living with intent. And what a great season to ask those hard questions, to just say, wait a minute, am I doing this to honor God? Because you know what? There are examples, there's precedents in the scriptures of people doing extravagant things for God and God being excited about that. But, you know, is it that or is it I'm just trying to impress my neighbors? I can't answer those questions for you. I don't know. I have a hard time asking those myself, you know. But let's have the courage at Christmas time to ask those questions. All right. Flowing out of question number one comes question number two. Here's an interesting question. Do our decorations fit in too well with our non-Christian neighbors. Again, if your plan is just to celebrate the holiday, that's one thing. But if you want to commemorate Christmas, maybe our decorations should look different than our neighbors, if our neighbors aren't believers. You know, I look at a lot of the traditions that God prescribed, the ones that he did say, do this, do this. They generally were question-provoking because who else is doing them, you know? And so I wonder sometimes, like, what if we did things different? That we put a twist on things, or we just opted out of something. What if our traditions cause people to ask so that when they ask, we were able to say, all right? Another question to talk about with yourself, your friends, your family, roommates. Have any of our decorations become detached from their intended meaning? You know, the stockings one is one that I wrestle with from time to time. And in a lot of ways, I kind of wish we hadn't established the tradition that we did with our kids. Because how cool would it be that if our stockings, they weren't for us. That our stockings were things that we stuffed for others and then gave away. Or this idea of a stocking ding-dong ditch. Like where you have a stocking that you fill with things that you know somebody needs. And you don't sneak into their house. I'm not advocating for that. But maybe you drop it off on their doorstep, you know, ring the doorbell and try to get away, you know, but anonymously basically recapturing the essence of that thing. What if we did that with other symbols? It was great. Brittany was setting things up here today, and she said, hey, I got the Magi on the east. And I'm like, just those little things. Has this just become a decoration, or are we really commemorating? This is what it's about. Just a thought. All right, more than a thought. But all right, number four. Let's take a look at this. Now, number four is more about warm fuzzies than biblical mandate. But I think God wants to give us a warm fuzzy if they're for the right way. Here's what number four says, and let's talk about it. Number four says, have we begun to confuse new with improved? Have we begun to confuse new with improved? And what I mean by that is I look back at Christmas when I was growing up. When I was growing up, part of what made that such a profound time for us was we would pull out the same things. We weren't always trying to upgrade. And I'm not telling you don't ever add to, because you have new memories to add to too. But I'm thinking about going up our stairway at the old farmhouse. And we had the same stockings. We never changed them. And how powerful was that? Now, our society around us is going to want to say, oh, those were so 2008. Here's the new stockings you've got to get. There was something powerful about having the same Christmas stockings. And I talk to people who are college age. I talk to people who are adult that go back to spend time with extended family. Isn't there something about seeing that Christmas stocking that you had when you were a kid? How many of you still know have seen the Christmas? Look at that. Isn't there something about that? You know, I think about our manger scene. We had the same manger scene all the way growing up. And there was something that made that, okay, this... It anchors you to the past, or some of the same decorations, all that kind of stuff. I want to encourage a lot of us, if we want to really commemorate Christmas, if we really want to lock in this, don't feel like it's got to be new and improved. It's got to be new and improved. It's got to be new and improved. In fact, you look again how God established these things. He's like, these are the 12 stones. Don't switch them out. You know, Passover, use this, 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 and this. Don't adapt it to that, 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 and that. Just a thought. All right, number five. Here's the last one we'll look at today. Oh, I hope we do more of this, all of us. Are we protecting our savor the season moments? We got to protect our savor the season moments. This is a season that can be filled with so many great savor the season moments, can it? We just had one of them a couple days ago. My schedule, like most of you guys, is just, it's insane. It is crazy. You wake up every day and you add things to the list more than you cut off. And so this time of year, too, gets really, really full. But the girls were asking, we were unpacking our Christmas stuff. And the girls were saying, hey, because they found Charlie Brown Christmas. They said, could we pop some popcorn and watch this movie? You know, and if I were to look at my calendar would say no. But you can't let your calendar dictate what's most important. You should dictate what's most important. And so we're like, you bet. And oh, how great was it? Pop some popcorn and turn off all the lights except the Christmas lights and watch poor Charlie Brown get ripped for half an hour. I forgot that poor guy. But But that idea, I don't know what it is for you. Maybe for you, it's get some hot cocoa and a great coffee, turn off all the lights, and just have just you and the Christmas music. Maybe there's something you've done. I know some people have done fondue. They have these different traditions. Protect those as best you can, because no one will protect them for you. In fact, the opposite will be true. People will try to pull you and pull you and pull you and pull you and pull you to fit their agenda, to fit their calendar. And you be as respectful as you can, but you have to savor it. And you can't savor it by doing everything. So I want to encourage you and tell you, say no. Say no to a lot of stuff so that you can say yes to the things that are most important. And talk about those. As a family, talk about those. As friends, talk about those. Yourself, talk. List out what are the things that I don't want to miss. Do what you need to do to protect those. And let the other stuff go. Protect the things, and so that you can savor the season. Well, those are some questions, not all the questions, not even necessarily the best questions, but examples of questions that you should start asking. Ask yourself, talk with others, so that this could be a season that doesn't just fly by. This isn't a season where you just end up more burned out, more strapped, but this could be a season that's meaningful and one that you savor.